The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Less than 2 weeks until the NFL draft. What will the Jets do? Move up, move down, trade a star player, stay at number 7? If they do that, who do they take? We're covering it all on this episode of Flight Plan. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with Zach Rosenblatt, the Athletics Jets reporter. Nick Baumgartner is going to join us today as well. NFL draft expert at The Athletic. He joined us last year. It was really good. So we have Nick back here a little bit later in the show. Before we get to Nick, though, and we're going to get right into it here. None of this talk about bachelor parties and weddings and that stuff.
I am planning my wedding, but yeah, we don't need to talk about it. I'm already annoyed about getting asked about it by every family member every time I talk to them. So,
okay, good. So we're going straight football. We're going to start with a little bit of news. First of all, this one coming down today. Alan Lazard is staying a New York Jet, choosing the pay cut over trying to find something out there. This was kind of unthinkable in December and January that Alan Lazard would be part of the 2025 New York Jets, but that was when he had an $11 million base to his contract. That is now $2.25 million. The cap hit goes from $13.2 million down to $4.6 million, and he will be a free agent at the end of the year. There's some dead money in 2026 on this $4.4 million. But I think, right, Zach, this, as negative as this is as a take, this speaks to the value of Alan Lazard as far as the league goes, right?
In terms of that, I thought you meant to the Jets, but yes.
That like there was nothing better out there.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those funny... the Jets are making Alan Lazard available. Let him speak to teams. Well, nobody's going to trade for Alan Lazard with $11 million cap hit. I would say, like, and I've seen some people react in this way where they think this doesn't necessarily lock him into the Jets. Like, they could still trade him because of the it's cheaper now. Nobody wants to trade unless it's the Steelers if or when they sign Aaron Rodgers. The Jets were speaking pretty highly of him at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago, both Darren Mooji and Aaron Glenn. They keep highlighting these receivers' blocking ability, and that's like his skill when he doesn't have Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball. So they're going to run it a lot. So you have Josh Reynolds and Alan Lazard. Both the guys are supposedly good at blocking. So I don't know. Yeah, like you said, I couldn't have fathomed this, especially like amid his first season with the Jets, which was an absolute disaster. He was one of the worst receivers in the NFL. Started to play a little better last year, got hurt, then kind of reverted back to form. Still drops too many passes. Has basically openly admitted he's not that good without Aaron Rodgers. So it's going to be interesting to see, but you know, there's not many great options out there. They clearly weren't going to go after any of these free agent receivers like Stephon Diggs. I mean, he signed with the Patriots for a lot of money, but the guys that are still there, like Tyler Lockett, Amari Cooper, doesn't seem like they're really interested in them. They're over 30, which is kind of the baseline of what the Jets won't sign anymore. They only will get guys that are under 30. I still think they need really badly to add another wide receiver in this draft, which we'll talk about with Nick in a little bit. But it wasn't surprising now. It would have been surprising if you had told me at the beginning of the offseason, Alan Lazard will be back on a pay cut. Like, that means that, like you said, there's not interest in him around the league. And maybe he also just didn't want to, like, move. I don't know. Like, that's the best explanation I can think of. Their receiver room still does not look good. It's Garrett Wilson, then it's Josh Reynolds, Alan Lazard, Malachi Corley, and Xavier Gibson. Like, that is still not a good wide receiver room outside.
And I don't even know what's the order of 2 through 5 at that list.
Yeah, I'd probably say Reynolds, if you're just even basing it on money, like, Reynolds would be 2, Lazard 3, Corley 4, I guess. Yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, I think Reynolds and Lazard would be perfectly fine if they're like 3 or 4. As of right now, they're the 2 and 3. So they need somebody in this draft. I don't know who or when they're going to get it. The Jets don't have a great history of drafting wide receivers. This is a new regime, though. Don't have a great one outside of Garrett Wilson. But yeah, Alan Lazard's still a Jet against all odds.
Yes, he is. And the one throwing him the ball, obviously, will be Justin Fields, who had his first media availability this week. And wow, it's quite a change. I mean, this isn't great for you, Zach, but it was like boring.
Yeah. Boring. I was thinking that. I was going to tweet something, but I didn't want it to come across as me being like mean. But like, the Jets don't have to worry about Justin Fields making like controversial headlines.
He's not going on McAfee this season.
He's not going on McAfee. He's not going to throw Mike Williams under the bus. He's not going to, Aaron Rodgers gave us plenty of content, and remove all the controversy stuff. Aaron Rodgers is an all-time like podium guy. Like, you could ask him a question, he's going to give you a thoughtful answer. There's not many questions he won't answer, and if he doesn't, there's obviously like a reason or he's mad about something. So like, it was very enjoyable as a reporter to be able to, like, press conferences are often not, I need to be there. Like Zach Wilson, I wasn't dying to be at a Zach Wilson press conference when I covered the Giants, Daniel Jones, when I covered the Eagles, Carson Wentz, like very boring quarterbacks. Justin Fields, I think, has more personality than a couple of those guys, but he's not going to say anything controversial. The closest he came was basically admitting that he was uncomfortable being a backup last year for the Steelers, which is the closest he's come to admitting that that's a reason why he came to the Jets, which he wouldn't say. And yeah, you know, it's not a bad thing for the Jets, who are not trying to make headlines anymore. They're trying to have a quiet offseason. It's maybe not the best for like us as reporters, but his play style is exciting. So he'll still give us a lot to write about. So right now I'm okay with it. We'll see if I'm complaining when we get to the season and he's not saying anything, but I've had worse, I would say. So there you go.
maybe he'll get off to a great start and he'll just start giving out these fantastic quotes. Who knows?
And start trashing the Bears like publicly and
the Steelers, Mike Tomlin, trashing Mike Tomlin. That'd be something. All right. So that was kind of the news and notes. Now let's get into the draft. And in order to do that, we're going to welcome in Nick Bumgarner, senior writer at The Athletic with a specialization in the NFL draft. Hey, Nick, thanks for coming on, man.
Good, guys. How are you?
We're great. We're good. I'll start here. We were just talking about Justin Fields. You've obviously been covering the draft for a little while. He came out of the draft as a first round pick going to the Chicago Bears. Can you just like give us, looking back, give us some insight into like what you thought of him then, and has he shown what you thought he would show, and how is he compared in his time in the NFL to what you thought of him coming out of Ohio State?
Yeah, so it's really a unique conversation with him, because I feel like in a lot of ways, it went exactly how I think we thought it was going to go in Chicago, because they took him before they were ready to, you know, absorb a rookie who was going to need a little bit of time to adjust everything that was going on. And then they just dumped it all on his shoulders, and they were kind of like, well, you know, Joe Burrow did it, so you can do it. And it was like, okay, no, this is not, you know, and it never worked. I mean, then they just kept making, you know, bad decisions to try to dig themselves out of holes. You know, the Bears have drafted well. They've gotten talent on there, but not a lot of good fits that fit together. It's been, you know, it was a mess. And, you know, they put it all on him. And I didn't think that was fair, but I also didn't think that Justin was a guy that was going to be, you know, a day one out of the box, like ready to go. He had things he needed to work on in terms of processing and footwork and all that sort of stuff. And I honestly think last year when he goes 4-2, and it's not perfect, but I mean, it looked, you know, he's winning some games, and then they sit him down for whatever reason. That looked more like the guy that I thought we would end up seeing if he were to go to a better team to start the whole thing out. I like this fit. I'm, you know, I was around, I'm in here in Detroit, as you guys know. So I'm around the Lions all the time, And when Aaron Glenn was here, he's like one of my favorite assistants I've ever been around. I mean, he was awesome. And I feel like Aaron Glenn's influence on Justin Fields, you know, I've always said this, he and Dan Campbell are like very, very similar people. And I think that Glenn will have, he should anyway, have a good influence on Fields in terms of, you know, if he's freaking out, if he panics, because I do think he gets into his head a little bit too, right? That was still a thing at Ohio State, even though he had such a good career. I think AG will be really good for him. So, I mean, I'm hopeful for this to work out for the Jets because it's a nice deal. And I still think Fields at a really young age can be a really good player. We've seen examples of this before. And I think this is another one that, you know, possibly could turn around the right way.
Yeah, I actually want to pull on that AG thread. I was going to ask you about him later, but since you said you love him so much as an assistant, like I'm guessing everybody in Detroit probably knew he wasn't going to be there for a while, but I'm curious what you thought when he took the Jets job and what, like from your perspective, what they're getting in him, not only just as like a head coach, but as like a defensive tactician. Like he was obviously, he did a lot with a little for a long time there.
Exactly.
And they dealt with all the injuries and all that stuff, which is a sign of a good coach, obviously.
I think the number one thing that I noticed with him, you know, is even more at the very beginning of their run there in Detroit, when it was still just, they had nothing. I mean, the roster was just total garbage at that point. It was just like cast offs and what have yous. When Campbell walked into a room, it took him a little while to get everybody on board. When Aaron Glenn walked into a room, it didn't. People immediately respected who he was. They knew who he was, especially if they played defense. You know, the one thing that people forget about is AG was in, you know, player like roster development scouting before he got back into coaching. So a lot of these guys, he's been around, like he's known them since their high school days. He follows them super close into college career and all that. And his connection, you know, coach to player is about as good as I've seen, you know, and I think he levels with people, is very honest with them, demands a lot, obviously, and sometimes can run hot, which is fine. But at the same time, I think he's going to surround himself with guys that can take that hard coaching and can take that sort of, you know, whatever attitude, but knowing on the back end that, you know, he wants the best for them as well. Like it's, you guys were talking about Josh Reynolds there earlier. It's no surprise they brought him in. I mean, Josh was one of the first guys that they brought in Detroit that helped stabilize a position that was kind of all over the place. I think Glenn has a really good ability to relate with players. There's nothing that they've been through or are going through that he hasn't seen himself. You know, and I think that that's his number one strength is like, I've always said, like he would be an amazing college coach. They would have to pay him $1 billion.
100%.
He would be an incredible college coach. Right?
He'd be a great recruiter too.
Yeah. Like, an amazing recruiter. Yeah. He would be incredible. And you see that sometimes with the staffing hires that he's able to put together and two guys will follow him. And then as a tactician, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that, cause not, he used to get mad, I think a lot of times because fans here were always so upset because the defense never really matched what the offense was doing, but they never really realized that he didn't have any, you know, he didn't have even close to the number of talent, you know, talented players that they had. And then they had a lot of injuries and things like this. I always found that he was at his absolute best when they were like totally down and out and he had to just scrap everything and just let's go make it work with what we have. And I wonder and I'm curious sometimes because he could overdo it on some things. He could, you know, put too much on, you know, a team or a roster that wasn't quite ready for it and he would have to pull back. But once he was able to calibrate and sort of realize what he had, I really felt like there was a good connection there. Really good connection from player to coach. That's what you get with him.
You have a mock out. Can we get into that a little bit?
Yeah.
Your latest mock. Sure. We'll get to the Jets and their first round pick, but you actually have Mason Graham going to the Giants, which I haven't seen in a lot of places. Thoughts on that move and how that like alters the rest of what you have in the mock.
Yeah. So I had Hunter going 2, obviously, and then Cam Ward at 1, and it came down to Abdul Carter or Mason Graham there at 3 for the Giants. And obviously, you know, if the Giants go through and do medicals and everything looks good with Carter's foot, then that would have been my selection. But I don't know that that's happened. And that is the one thing that has given me pause on him, you know, Carter, that is. I mean, he's arguably the number one player in this draft, right up there with Hunter or close to it when he's healthy. But that cracked foot or whatever it was, that they tried to downplay at the combine, and then it got a little bit like, we'll see what happens. Didn't work out at his pro day after saying he was going to. Didn't have the surgery, which he said wasn't going to happen either. So that still gives me a little bit of pause, and then I look at it and weigh it together, and I think Mason Graham is maybe the highest floor player in the class, maybe of anybody other than Hunter. He's easily the best defensive tackle. He was completely dominant at Michigan. I think there were times last year you could find on his tape where he got a little bored at times too. I mean, he's been just an outstanding player in terms of being able to play the nose, three tech. He can kick out to edge. So I really like him a lot. And I just felt if there's an injury concern there, I would give the tiebreaker to Graham. But if there's not, I would go back with Carter.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating, but I love it. I think Giants fans would actually lose their mind.
They didn't like it at all. I heard from Giants. What are you doing?
I was like, hey, whenever you do something that the fans like are like not expecting it, you and I messaged a little bit about this before because we're going to ask you about it a little later. But Rich Cimini wrote something like suggesting the Jets like would consider trading Breece Hall and then drafting Janty. And that I wrote about that and all the comments were like, why would you even suggest this?
Yeah.
This is the dumbest article I've ever read. How dare you? Like all this stuff. The draft brings out the most anger.
It does.
I'm sure you deal with it all the time.
Yeah.
But so let's get to the Jets. So you did first and second round. Your second round pick, I definitely want to ask you about in a second. We'll cover the first round one first. Armin Membo has been kind of the chalk pick for the Jets right now. I'm curious, can you tell me what you think about him? I know he's an athletic freak. And then, like, Will Campbell, I know they need a right tackle, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's only played left tackle. So I'm curious, like, how do you compare those two guys? And what do you think of the idea? Like, if the Jets really liked Will Campbell, what do you think about them taking him instead of Membo?
Yeah, that's a toughie for me to split in hairs to a degree on some of that. I feel like they're different players. Membo's going to bring more oomph and more thump, I think, a little bit. And in time, he could be the better player of the two. Certainly, I think he's got more physical traits and more tools at his disposal. But Campbell, he got dinged because of the short arms and all this stuff and everything else. And I think he ended up measuring fine at the pro day. He was 33 inches at his pro day. So, it's still a little short, but whatever. The thing with him, though, is, there might not be a harder worker in terms of technique, attention to detail, and just showing up every day going to work in the draft than Will Campbell. Like, you talk to Duke Manyweather, who's the offensive line guru there with all the draft picks. He had Campbell in this year. And I talked to him once earlier this spring for a story about another guy that he had. And he just every 5 seconds he's putting Will Campbell in. He's like, I'm like, we know that Will Campbell, but it's like this kid works so hard and he already is so good. And I think that that's a thing that teams are really, really going to like about him. But with Membo, there's a lot of, rawness still to his game. I guess we'll say he's still growing into that position and learning how to be an offensive tackle. But at the same time, when you watch his tape and just sort of go through it, kind of quickly and not with a fine tooth comb, you don't really, it's hard to tell that he's raw. Cause I mean, he moves so well, he's a thumper, he uses his hands, pretty well for the most part. Also a guy that I think could move around, play either side. If you needed him to play left or right, I think he could also play guard. He could do kind of whatever you need him to do. So the potential maybe long-term to be a whoa type offensive tackle, I think is higher with Membo, but right now, I think you would be getting a better player, a little bit better anyway, with Campbell. So it's a really tough call, but I think both guys are certainly top 10 picks. And both guys would be really good fits for what New York's or where they're at right now in terms of let's just get good players in here and start building from there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why he's become, especially because you can plug him in a right tackle right away, I feel like, and then really have an option there. But
yeah,
so your second round pick, I saw this and I loved it. I'm a big fan of you have Jalen Milroe, the quarterback. I'm very intrigued by him because he's obviously so fast. He's got great arm strength. Everybody hypes up his IQ and how hard of a worker is. Obviously, developmental guy. I know the Jets, I think they either hosted him or they went to his pro day. And they also their QB coach was working him out of the combine. Curious, tell me your thought process there. I mean, he obviously fits into what they want to do on offense when you have Justin Fields and they're going to be very run heavy. But curious what your thought process was there.
I think that it's a great fit for him because he would be able to get some time to just sit there and just learn and adjust and all the things that he needs to do that he never really did at Alabama. They played him young. And I remember Saban started him and then benched him because it was it got so bad. And they played him young because they didn't have anybody else. And he was an amazing athlete, as we've seen. And it's just been, he's gotten better, and there are games in there where you go back and you look and you say, whoa, today he was on it. His feet were good. He was in the pocket. He wasn't rushing things. He wasn't panicking. And it looked really good. But when he would play, some defenses that either lit him up or, threw, coverages at him that he hadn't seen before, it could be a problem, which you see a lot of that, when you're playing Alabama, and that's natural too. I just think, he's a guy that I loved. Like you said, it's a situation where you already have an athletic quarterback who's going to run the ball in an offense that's probably built to highlight some of that. And so he'd be learning in a system that is going to work for him anyway. He'd have time to do it. You have Fields on a short deal anyhow. So whatever happens with all that, you know, situation down the road, there's no pressure there one way or the other. You have another option if you have it behind him. And I do think that Milroe, like you mentioned, Zach, I mean, he works his butt off. I mean, that's been the rap on him forever. I mean, I got a text the other day. I'm like, has there ever been a more cut up, like rocked up quarterback prospect in the history of football than this guy? Like, I mean, and he is. I mean, he's a total beast. I think actually you could probably get something out of Jalen Milroe in the run game right now. Yeah, right now. You know, next year it wouldn't be able to go in there and, you know, take the offense over probably. But I do think he's so good on the open field. Like, people talked a lot last year about how good Daniels was coming out of LSU. It's not anything close to what Milroe can do. This guy's another level of football player. Like, I think he ran, was it 4.44 flat? And I think that was a disappointment for him. I think he wanted to be in the 4.3s for real. So I like him a lot, but it's got to be in the right situation in the right place. And, you know, we always see quarterbacks go way higher than they probably should, unfortunately for them sometimes. But this felt like a really good fit for me with the Jets.
I could see him being a guy that goes higher than he probably should, honestly, absolutely. Too. Like, especially the fact that they invited him to the draft, it really caught my eye too.
You never know with that. Like, I think that's been talked about for a couple months now, that he could be a guy. Like, I thought about him even for Pittsburgh. You know, I actually gave them Shadur. And I think that's actually the best fit for Shadur, wherever that is. But like, Pittsburgh would be another place if they land Rodgers and can get him to just say, hey, let's like do your job here. Understand that you're 41 years old, mentor this young kid and we'll move forward. Like, I think if he can sit behind somebody and really learn and have a patient head coach that understands what he's going through and understands the situation, then I think it could really, really be, you know, the souped up Jalen Hurts is what everybody compares what he could be. And I think that's very real if you could get him there. That's the hard part though.
We mentioned that you have Membu going to the Jets, but some other options there if it isn't him. And I think Jets fans would be pretty happy if that's the guy they get. Safe pick, confident pick. Mm-hmm. But obviously, this is a team that needs a tight end as well. Tyler Warren, thoughts about the idea of picking him in that spot?
Yeah, I love Tyler Warren. I love Colson Loveland, too. You know, those guys at the top are really, really good players and probably kind of a 1A, 1B situation. I think they both you know, if either one went in the top 10, it would not surprise me. Warren, for me, is a little bit better overall of a prospect just because I think he's got a much higher ceiling as a blocker. Loveland is probably the better receiver, better route runner, all that sort of thing. But Warren, you know, when you look at, I mean, he caught 100 passes last year. Every single thing that Penn State did as an offense ran through him. You know, it was even blocking. I mean, in the run game, I mean, they used him almost like an extra tackle several times. And he throws about as well of a dominant block as you'll see from a tight end at, you know, 260, whatever it was, 255, 260. And he's rocked up. There's no fat on his body. Really hard to bring down in the open field. Like, I mean, my best comp for him is Dallas Clark. I think that's a pretty popular one. The old Colts tight end that came out of Iowa there. A real thumper on first down who can get open on third down, make a catch, maybe not for 60 yards, but keep the chains moving, keep you on the field. And if you're trying to run the ball, like I would assume the Jets are going to do, like, you need to have tight ends that can block it. They don't have to be dominant, but they have to be, you know, willing and plus blockers. And I think that Warren is clearly the better blocker, and that's in that duo there. Though Loveland is also really good. I mean, he played in one of the hardest offenses for a tight end to block at Michigan. They run everything, you know, in their run game and everything else. And he was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't bad. He's a smaller guy and thinner guy anyway. And you combine that with everything he can do in the pass game, it would not shock me at all if a team likes Loveland more than Warren, quite frankly. So we'll see on that. Those are both elite tight ends, and it's a really good tight end class, too. Yeah. So if you don't want to do that, you know, I love guys like Mason Taylor, the kid from LSU, I think is outstanding. And on down the line, Elijah Arroyo, Terrence Ferguson. So really good tight end class again this year. Good year to need one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about those guys because the Jets have – they haven't had like a legit tight end. Like Dustin Keller was the last one that was like really productive.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Fans, but Jets fans would tell you like, Tyler Conklin was like solid the last couple of years, but like not that good. So right now their tight ends are Jeremy Ruckert and Stone Smart.
Not
the most exciting group at the moment.
I mean, the position has changed so much, right, over the last 10 years.
Really
and
has.
I feel like a lot of teams are starting to catch up to that. It's taken some a little bit longer, but you know, the colleges have certainly caught up to it and you're seeing better prospects as a result.
Yeah. All right. We should get into the running back thing because that's the thing that riles everybody up the most. So I wrote about it just because it became like such a conversation, at least around here. And the idea is Ashton Jeanty, is that how you say it? Jeanty?
Jeanty, yeah. Jeanty. I think so.
He's like such a highly regarded prospect. And if you think that he's like Hall of Fame caliber guy, then like you take him and then you get some value for Breece or whatever. I don't think that's actually going to happen.
Yeah.
But I did find it interesting because if you go back and look in, I forget what year it was they traded Swift. It was the year they drafted Gibbs, right?
Yes, it was right before that.
So the Lions kind of did something similar that year. They signed David Montgomery in free agency first. Yeah. They had Swift on the roster, and then they get Gibbs. So then they turn around and trade Swift, who was in his fourth year of his rookie deal, like Breece Hall is, was set to become a free agent. So there's like a lot of parallels there to where Aaron Glenn wants to be a running. They want to be a running team. They're going to run the ball a lot. If he does, Breece Hall has had a rough year. He's in a contract year. You have Braylon Allen on the roster already. Like, and then you would get this running back under contract for 4 or 5 years. So like in terms of like all those things, logically, there's some sense to it. They obviously have way more needs than the Lions probably did when they got Gibbs, though, would be the difference. But what do you think about that idea? What do you think about him as a prospect?
Yeah, I think it'd probably be a little bit too early. I would agree with that because I think Detroit did that in their third year of their rebuild there. I think that was enough time had passed to where they were kind of like, okay, let's tinker with some things. But I mean, Jeanty is the guy that you would do it for, to be quite honest. I mean, he's in that category of, you know, Bijan and Gibbs and Saquon. And some scouts that you talk to think he's better than both Bijan and Gibbs were coming out. Wow. And it's hard to totally disagree with some of that based on, you know, he didn't play the competition that those guys did. But I mean, he absolutely dominated that level and just it wasn't even close. And then you start to look at everything he can do from, you know, his vision, his ability to make cuts and stay on his feet, get hit and stay on his feet, seamlessly transition from, you know, OK, it's not working here. I know where to go without even blinking. That reminds me a lot of Gibbs. And then there's also, you know, he can handle the physical load. He's handled the heavy workload his entire run. He was a receiver at times in high school. I think he was actually a full-time receiver for a bit in high school, played quarterback in high school too. So he's not only a guy that will catch the ball out of the backfield on, you know, running back routes, he could go out in the slot and run around and do some things too. I think Jeanty is the rare running back that you never have to take off the field ever. He will be able to function at a high level in anything you're doing. Gap run, outside zone, screen play, whatever. Make him ask him to pass block, he can do it. And that is really, I think, the bar that you're looking for when you look at like the no doubters of a first round running back. And that's him. And I mean, and it is. And I think that he's a guy that physically can handle the load. There's nothing that you see on his tape that gives you any hesitation that that won't happen. And so I do think he'll be a top 10 pick. You know, I just don't know, you know, if it'll be the Raiders or if somebody else decides to make a move on that. But maybe a little early for the Jets. But I do like I don't hate the idea of them getting another running back in this class because it's a terrific running back class. To push, you know, maybe you push Breece or whatever. And you, like you said, he's coming into his contract year. You don't want to pay him. Get another running back in this class. That absolutely could be a thing for the Jets this year.
The top of the show, we talked about the Jets receiving core. Obviously, it's Garrett Wilson, and then it's the drop off Reynolds. And now Alan Lazard is back. But there's a clear need for somebody out of this draft to hopefully fill that number two receiver slot. So assuming they're not going to go there with that first pick, when you look in rounds 2, 3, 4, who are some of the receivers that they'd come out smiling after taking?
Yeah, I'm really curious to see where Luther Burden and Emeka Ibuka end up if they slip into the first round or if they last until the second. Because if either of those guys last until the second, that would be a terrific ad for just about anybody. Like Ibuka is one of the most quarterback friendly receivers. I think he is the most in the class in terms of always being open and coming downhill to the ball, all that good stuff. Burden is got some Debo in him and he can do some other things as well. But if you go down further into the guys that'll probably be there, my two favorites are actually the Iowa State guys, Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins. Higgins is the bigger of the two, 6'4". Both of them are really fast. Both of them can play up in the air. So Higgins would be more of your X, but Jalen Noel is smaller at 5'10", about 200 pounds, but he can fly. He can adjust to the ball. He comes back to, you know, both of them run back after the quarterback gets out, but Noel made some catches behind his body and up in the air this year that guys his size shouldn't be doing. And the other thing there too, with all the guys I mentioned, including Burden and Ibuka, those guys at Iowa State, they block their butts off. Like that's pretty much all they do for the most part there at Iowa State is block. And then occasionally they'll get a ball thrown their way. And I know, you know, AG, like I do, I mean, they're not going to take a receiver unless the guy blocks, and that's just not going to happen. So
it's the first thing he says with these receivers when he talks about them. Yeah,
totally. Like those guys come to mind. And then another one would be Jack Besh. I always say his name wrong. Jack Beck, but it's Besh. I got to keep going on that one.
I got
Jack
Besh. If I get him, I'll know that
from,
now.
from TCU, who reminds a lot of people of Puka, quite frankly, and maybe a better blocker or blocking version of Puka. He started out at LSU behind Neighbors and Brian Thomas and did okay actually there, and then ended up transferring, got hurt. And so people kind of lost track of him a little bit, but he went to the Senior Bowl and was terrific at the Senior Bowl. One of the best players there. And he's another one that's, he's big. He's 6'1", 215, and he will absolutely block. So I feel like there are guys as you go down there into that second round, into third round. I wouldn't wait forever though, you know, because I don't think this is the deepest wide receiver class that we've seen in years. So but there are definitely quality guys there in the top 100.
So I do have one more question. I'm just curious real quick. What do you think of T-Mac from Arizona? Because I am an Arizona guy, so I'm curious.
Yeah, I like him. I still like him. I mean, I don't care. It was like low 4.5s. Yeah. Like whatever. Like he's
not a burner, but
No, he's not a burner. He's a legit 6'4". He's a legit 6'4". He's a big dude. He can play bigger than 215. And I don't think, and we've heard some rumblings that he was not 100% healthy this past season. If you go back and you watch that tape from 2 years ago or whatever it was, his sophomore year, he was ridiculous, ridiculous. Unreal. And the quarterback play there was not elite by any stretch. He was the only guy they had for the most part. And just like, I mean, this is a pro Arizona podcast now. Yes, because he was terrific. I mean, this guy, he won in the air. He won on every route. He run in the slot. I think he can get open. I think he can be the big X that can kind of move around and do some things too. And everything you hear about him, his work ethic is great. Just a great kid who loves football. Stayed at Arizona when he certainly could have left. I mean, that's pretty easy to say too. So I like him a lot, and I wouldn't hate him with the Jets either, to be quite frank. That's another position of need if they want to go that route that early.
Yeah, and it would be hard for me not to to hide.
Yeah, you'd have to put your Homer hat down on that one.
Yeah, I'll wear my Arizona hat every day just so we can like see it and be like, hey,
you can bond. Yeah,
yeah. So whenever I have like guys like you or Dane, obviously the beast is out. By the way, the interface that they did online is like so
awesome,
sick.
Isn't it? So like, good. Yeah,
I didn't know they were doing that, so that was really cool. But highly recommend that. But I like asking you guys, like, as I know you draft experts, you all have like your guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, who are some of your guys in this draft class that you're like to the death will fight for?
One would be, you know, there's a couple defensive backs. And the one that always comes to mind for me is Malachi Starks, the kid from Georgia, who did not have the best year of his career last year. It wasn't, you know, Georgia wasn't as good either. And he didn't test. People did not expect him to test like super well. I think he was a 4.5 guy. Some of the numbers were, you know, a little bit less than you would think of when you think of a dominant player. But having been around Brian Branch here in Detroit, like that's who this is. I mean, it's Brian Branch part two. I mean, this guy can play in the slot. There were times where they asked him to play outside corner at Georgia, and he did fine despite the speed and everything else. Outstanding elite ball skills. Kirby Smart's compared him to Champ Bailey several times, which is about as good as it gets on that front. So he's a guy that I think people sort of got down on for whatever reason, for a number of different reasons. I feel like that's sort of self-correcting itself now, though, as you see him getting a little bit higher on the board. But I really have a hard time feeling like he's not going to be a good player somewhere pretty quickly also. And then my other guy that I really like, and a lot of people have caught on to this one, is Gray Zabel, the kid from North Dakota State, the center guard slash tackle slash whatever else you need him to do. he is a really, really fun player. I actually talked to him not that long ago, and he told me a story about when he was he played everything in college, center, guard, tackle. In high school, when he was like a sophomore, he's on one of the best teams in the state. They're in the state championship game. He's been a tackle his entire season as like a 14-year-old, right? Whatever it is. Center breaks his hand in the state championship game. They go to halftime. Coach comes over to him and says, you know, Gray, you have 15 minutes to learn how to snap the ball because you're going in here, second half of the state title game. He figured it out, and they won the state title. And it's been like, and that's just how he has attacked everything, I feel like, as a football player. Just a complete natural athlete and very, very smart. And everything with him just sort of, if you tell him once, it goes right into implementation on the field. And he's another one that's, a guy that goes to the small school, all that stuff. It's probably not big enough to play tackle in the NFL, but as an interior lineman, man, like those guys can be so valuable. And I feel like a guy that can move around like that can be even more so. So he's another one that I would say is really good player who's going to be really good.
And I feel like those North Dakota State and those North Dakota offensive linemen,
they know what they're doing.
They always got the best personalities too.
Yeah. Like, Zabel is also an active farmer, believe it or not. He helps operate a real farm.
I was going to guess something like that. Yeah.
I mean, it's like work ethic off the charts, right? So he's a terrific kid.
Really That's awesome. Player.
All right, Nick. Great stuff as always. Yeah. We appreciate you coming back for a second year to join us.
You bet, fellas. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
All right, Nick Baumgartner. Check out his stuff on The Athletic, along with obviously Dane Brugler's as well. The Beast is out this week. Zach mentioned the new, if you're checking it out online, if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, the new interface, really cool way to kind of go through and by position and see anyone you need to learn about. And it's not just learning truly how tall they are. Yeah, it's like learning like what their high school coach ate for lunch, and we're gonna
get Dane on hopefully next week, and we're also gonna get Connor Rogers. Like, we're going full blown draft mode. But like, I'm always fascinated by the way Dane does this. I mean, he starts on the next one, I'm sure, like now, but the level of detail in that thing is insane. You could go to like the 14th ranked guard, and he has like some backstory, and he has a quote from his coach, and he
spent probably an hour on the phone with the kid.
Yeah. And it's just the level of detail, it gets better every year somehow. And it really is the Bible. It's funny because I'm a coworker with Dane. He's like the one I asked him yesterday. I'm an idiot. I asked him yesterday if he could do the pod today, knowing that he would probably have a million interviews as he did. He's like been on national shows. He's been on local shows. but he was so nice about like, oh no, I can't. I'm really sorry, but we can do like next week, or, you know, we'll make it work. Everybody is obsessed with this thing in the business, in the NFL. Like I wonder, and I haven't asked him this, and he probably wouldn't answer it, if like an NFL team has tried hiring him, because he's very clearly a good scouting. Yeah. He knows what he's a good reporter. Like, he's good at all these things, and he's just an absolute stud. And the Beast, especially from now until the draft, is basically I'm going to be plagiarizing off Dane. While giving him credit, but I'll be plagiarizing off him to make myself sound smarter a lot over the next few weeks, and a lot of people are too. So I highly recommend, I mean, everybody who's listening to this probably knows about The Beast, but you can read it on the web, like before you had to download it and plug in the password and stuff. If you subscribe to The Athletic, you can see all of it on the website. You can still get the downloaded version, but you can see it on the website. It's very interactive, position by position. It shows like people who are in the top 100. You click on the guy's bio, and it like pops up with like his photo and all the like the things that you know and love from The Beast. So I actually have a story coming out tomorrow where they like us to do like a reaction type thing and tie it to our teams. And I just did something like alternative, like there's the like five guys that we've talked about that have been tied to the Jets the most, like Tyler Warren, Membo, Jalen Walker, Tet McMillan, and Mason Taylor. Like, those are probably the guys that have been tied to the Jets the most. So I went through The Beast and found like alternative options after the first round. Like, let's say they don't draft Tyler Warren, like who's a good tight end they could plug in as a starter in day one and round two or round three. So it's great for stuff like that. And it gets you excited for the draft to come. So he always drops it at the perfect time. I always have friends in the business like texting me being like, yeah, you're right, Taylor. I know that he doesn't go by Tet McMillan. He goes by T-Mac. Everybody calls him Tet McMillan because his name's Tatoria. But he, in fact, does not go by that. So if he becomes a Jet, you guys need to make sure you don't call him that anymore. But anyway, I spent a long time hyping up Dane, but The Beast is just so awesome, and I highly recommend looking.
All right. Anything else before we say goodbye? Like you said, more draft coverage coming next week. Hopefully Dane and also Connor Rogers, all of our like friends of the, you know, Badlands and the show and the Athletic.
We have access to a lot of talented people these days.
Yeah.
I would say anyone who's in the Badlands community, we do have the live show coming tomorrow.
Oh yes, live show Friday night, which unfortunately I am not going to make.
Yeah, Tim can't make it. But Samantha will be there in your honor. My fiance will be joining me. I'm very excited. We're going to be, I don't think I'm supposed to spoil anything. I'm going to be going on stage with a certain somebody that is very familiar to this podcast for the live show, I would say.
Together?
Yeah, that's the right reaction. Yeah, apparently we're going to be doing a segment together. So I'll be there with him, unfortunately, but also the rest of you. And I hope that people who are listening are going to be there, because it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be in the city. So I'll see you guys there if you're going. And if not, we'll come back with you guys for a couple pods in the coming weeks.
And then during the draft, we'll have plenty of pods rolling out day after day, I think, during the actual draft.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I would assume that the Patreon during the draft is going to be like four episodes a day with everybody like powering stuff out. So.
They pump those things out so quickly and so impressively. Like these Joe and Will and all these guys do such a good job. And Paul.
Yeah. All right. So thank you everybody for joining us. Weird time we came to you at today. So appreciate the people that tuned in 4 o'clock. Usually I know we're a little bit earlier in the day, but we will talk to everybody very soon. Thanks for joining us on Flight Plan.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.